United.
No, we're starting out in the very beginning.
David. Or Saul.
David. And what...
Saul, actually.
If I were going to put him in... Well, yeah, Saul. If I were going to put him in a list, where would I put him?
In the good list.
Okay. I would put him as Israel, because Israel wasn't divided at that time.
United Kingdom.
Yes, but we're talking about the divided kingdom here. When I say kings of Israel and kings of Judah. So, but there's still a paradigm. There's still the beginning source. Who is the beginning source for Judah?
David.
Yes, so this is what we
need. And who came after David?
Solomon.
And who was Solomon's son?
Rehoboam.
So we'll go that far. How about let's go to Israel? When they divided, why did they divide?
Solomon's sin, really.
What was his sin?
He let his many wives lead him astray. He no longer followed God wholeheartedly.
That was definitely...
He set up a lot of stuff. Worship lots of things himself, and it was awful.
Had he always been like that?
No.
He left the idol.
No, he hadn't been. In fact, it was so awful because God had appeared to him twice, talked to him twice. And that can still happen.
And the actual event was controversy with Jeroboam. Jeroboam was his commander, but right. They must have had words, and Jeroboam left.
Well, the prophet came in and spoke to Jeroboam, did he not?
Yeah,
he said he would.
But Jeroboam was encouraged by the prophet.
So what prophet was that?
Ahijah.
So there was Jeroboam. And who did Ahijah talk to? Solomon or Jeroboam?
Jeroboam.
Okay, so we'll put him there. How do you spell it? Gracie,
A-H-I-J-A-H.
A-H-I-J-H, did you say?
A-A-I-J. A-H.
Wait a minute, you said
A-H.
A-H. A-H.
I. J. A-H.
Okay. Was he called a prophet or a seer?
Prophet, I think.
Well, if you come to it, let me know.
I forgot.
I think it's prophet.
And actually, Solomon... really liked him. He liked what he saw. He thought he would sort of develop him. But what divided them? God did. God went and talked to him, to Jeroboam, and Solomon heard about that. What did he say to Jeroboam? You don't have to be exact.
If you would walk with him, love him, and serve him, he would give him 10 tribes.
And then he could actually become start a lineage right there.
Yeah.
So why would that bother Solomon?
Well, I don't know. He's losing it.
Kind of makes sense, huh? Mm-hmm. Instead of getting angry at God, which he probably did too, he got angry at Jeroboam. And so where did Jeroboam go?
Egypt.
He went to Egypt and hid out for a while. Okay, so let's look at last week I said we would start with 2 Chronicles 16 from last week's lesson. We'll kind of go through it fairly quickly.
Not really. We don't go by days. We just go by...
No, we don't go by days. In fact, just close your notebook because that won't help you.
It's better if you have your observation worksheet. We work from that more than anything.
The reason I do that is the goal of this class is to get you guys to discuss what you study. And it's not to repeat it or go over it because you might as well just hand me in a paper and I'll write it... if you got it right or wrong, and we don't want to do that. We really want to get it to be part of our thinking process. And to do that, you have to kind of move yourself away from what you did. So in 2 Chronicles 16, we started with a 36th year of Asa's reign. Where did Asa suddenly come from?
Asa was after Abijah.
Okay, so where's Abijah?
Abijah's after Rehoboam.
Okay, so it was his son. Mm-hmm. And then Asa. And he was around during the reign. Oh, I worked on this name and I still can't remember it. The way you say it right.
Nadab?
No. Oh, where did we do with Nadab?
After Jericho.
Okay. Let's put that up there. That's his son. He wasn't king for very long, was he? Why wasn't he a king for very long? Why?
He's killed.
I'm going to put him tilted a little because he really isn't in the direct line. And that's who came in the 36th year of Asa. Okay, and he was a king of Israel. Came up against Judah and fortified Ramah and to prevent anyone from going out or coming in. So now we're going to have a dispute or a problem here. What did Asa do with the treasuries for the house of the Lord and the king's house?
He took it.
Why?
He wanted to have a treaty. He wanted the help of that king. He no longer decided he needed God's help. Help the man was good enough.
Wasn't God was just wasn't moving fast enough. You know, I think sometimes that we get into trouble, not because we don't believe. It is because we don't believe, but it's not because we don't believe in God. It's because he's just not going fast enough. How many times have you had a prayer that didn't get answered and didn't get answered and didn't get answered, and then you think, well, maybe I'm supposed to do something? Or you start out there. Any, whatever it is, it's not trusting that God is in control and God is going to do it.
God let some circumstances happen, I think, to test him.
Absolutely.
And that's, he does that, of course, to us, but he didn't pass the test. I mean, he like decided he could figure this out on his own instead of turning to God.
And again, what are God's tests for?
To develop our character and trust in him.
And therefore, to see what's inside. See what's inside of us. And when he had a problem here, because he started seeing things going on, he saw the treaty that Baasha, king of Israel, made. He decided, with Ben-Hadad, he decided to offer Ben-Hadad more. Isn't that the way we always do things in America? Doesn't go right, we just offer more money. He said, Ben-Hadad listened to Asa, and sent the commanders of the armies against the cities of Israel, and they conquered those. And when Baasha heard of it, he ceased fortifying Ramah and stopped his work. What happened? What happened to his fortifications of Ramah?
Killed.
King Asa had people carry away the stones and the timbers, and he built them a city, a couple of cities.
Yeah, he fortified Geba and Mizpah.
So then, verse 7, at that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you have relied on the king of Aram and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Aram has escaped out of your hands. We are not the Ethiopians and the Lubim in an immense army with very many chariots and horsemen. Yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them to your hand. So he's reminding him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just before we go any further, who was this prophet?
Hananiah, and he's called a seer. Is there a difference?
Yes, no. It's the same thing. I don't know why they use one over the other. Maybe it's prophets generally, when you think of a prophet and they define prophets, prophets are the ones who see the future. I mean, we always talk about past, present, and future. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You know, however that goes together. But when you think of the prophets are the ones who see the future. But this seer is seeing what?
The present and what's happening and what the consequences will be.
So there's almost more exhortation, encouragement, visual stuff that's going on in this seer's life. He sees what's happening. God tells him what's going to happen. So there's a bit of the prophet there.
And then he tells him what's going to happen.
Which is?
He tells him, you've acted foolishly in this. From now on, you will surely have wars.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so wars are coming. And how is he giving him this picture? When you look at verse 8, verses 9. So 8 says, we're not the Ethiopians and the Lubim. And who are these people?
They were enemies that had come before.
So it's past wars, past situations. An immense army with very many chariots and horsemen. In fact, the Ethiopian had had a million, and he only had half a million. With very many chariots and horsemen, yet, because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hands. Was there even a war?
God fought the war.
Yeah. So,
but they got a lot of booty out of it.
And they did. They certainly did. So the Lord won that war. For the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his. So what is Hananiah teaching him?
Have a heart wholly devoted to God.
Trust God. What did he say, Grace?
To have a heart wholly devoted to God.
He pointed out here that his heart wasn't wholly devoted to God. So that was the confrontation.
Isn't it?
Yeah, he said. So far goes whose heart is. So he's the defining.
And he's told him he's acted foolishly.
Yes.
When I read that, it seemed like not in the eyes of Asa, not everything went badly, right? Did I get that wrong?
Not everything went badly with what?
With what he had done. What he decided to do, you know,
no,
make
fine.
A deal with this guy.
It worked out.
And so,
yes,
to me...
what other nations do.
And I think that could be part of the reason he started going his own way. But it seemed like, you know, Hananiah was saying, it would have been better if you had just done this.
Well, this is the struggle that we have trying to understand how it all goes together. But what we can understand is God in the past. I think that when he had his first taste with the Ethiopian, It was so big. There's no way he could have won.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He knew that, so he went to God. So is the reason he didn't go to God this time because he thought maybe he could win and had a way out?
Or did he think God would protect him anyway without asking?
I don't know that people think that far. Do we? I mean, think about it. How many times have there been situations in your life that you came up with a solution you thought you did, you didn't go to God about it, or maybe you kind of threw a prayer at him, but you went on and did what mm-hmm. you wanted to do because it seemed attainable for by you?
You begin to think it's your... Everything's just me. I mean, I can think of a current person who might think that way. Hey, I'm just... Everything's going to go good for me. I can't make any mistakes.
Hmm. Right, if I do, I'll get out of it fairly quickly.
Huh? Right goes before a fall.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're really big falls.
And then verse 10 shows us something too, doesn't it?
So what was Adas' response?
He was angry and put him in prison.
In fact, he was more than angry.
He was enraged.
He oppressed people.
He was enraged and he oppressed people at the time. So you kind of see him throwing a hissy fit. This is really the only time we've ever seen him do this.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, how many times have you thought, you've heard that somebody got angry and hurt somebody with words or physically, and you thought, I've never seen them like that. They couldn't have been. Somebody's telling a tale out of whatever. And then 6 months later, you see that person explode. And it becomes like, oh, it may have been there all the time. I think what God does with us is if we have those hidden areas, he's going to expose them.
Yeah.
Not because he's trying to embarrass you, but because he wants you healed and cleaned. All of us. I remember even as a young Christian, I got that pretty quickly. So sometimes I would just stuff it in and not do something. But is that following the Spirit? That's just not wanting to get caught. That isn't letting God clean it out of you. So I think what Asa didn't do is he didn't let God be the God in his life. I think it's very interesting when we read more about Ahab later on with Obed. That's not how you say it. Anyway, with the man he was working with, the two of them went out, and one did...
Jehoshaphat.
No, not Jehoshaphat. It's not Obadiah, but it's like that.
Oh, Obadiah, the servant.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
Obadiah, one way to find water.
Well, it's Omri. Right. So why did Ahab do that? Isn't that interesting to you? Well, in this case, Asa is going, it's going to be my way. So each king has a different area of sin that God is dealing with. Some of them, they don't belong to him at all. I mean, it's obvious. Others may, and it's between him and him, the Lord, and we can't really tell easily. I don't think he's easy to tell. I think this is a situation that makes us question him.
So when the prophet came and confronted him and said, you know, that God supports those whose hearts are completely his, and then you've acted foolishly, indeed, now you're going to have wars. He had a decision to make. He could have repented and turned.
Which we see him already do with a prophet.
Yeah, he could have repented and turned. Instead, he didn't. That was what was different between him and David at that point. It was, you know, confronted with your sin, what do you do with it?
I think that that's a good point. Because there's a constant comparison to David, and all of us know David did not live a perfect life. There is that Uriah thing, you know. I mean, he said it right there in the verse.
Except for, yeah.
But that, I think, is the point, that when the sin is pointed out, he repents. When, in the case of Uriah, when God was going to have to punish, David was saying, punish me, don't punish Israel. That is a man who took responsibility for his sin, even though God did have to punish Israel, too.
Well, the very fact that he took the treasures out of the temple shows that his heart, those were devoted things to God. And it showed right there that those were not important to him anymore. At first they were, he gathered them together and put them in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
But then, later on, They weren't that important. Get rid of them.
So why do you think he gathered them together to put in the temple?
Because they were devoted to God. They were gods.
He let us saw them as his. His, and he was going to take it, store his stuff.
It turned when the situation turned.
Right.
And, I mean, we hear sometimes, and it shocks us, like how a pastor or a elder or the treasurer took money from the church or did something like that. Somewhere along the line, there is a switch. I don't think it starts necessarily out that way at all, but when you get into a problem, sometimes looking for the solution and not looking for it in the Lord will put you in to the world solution. And we hear that in business all the time. But we walk a really narrow line, guys, when it comes to being faithful. And we don't walk a narrow line in the sense of salvation. God made that very big, but he gave us a very specific line to walk, and we need to learn what areas of our life could trip us up in those things. Because we all have them. Mm-hmm. We all have, I don't know if we necessarily still have the besetting sin, but we had it that we were dealing with it. And just knowing that it's there. I mean, an alcoholic can never ever take another drop again, but they also know they need to never ever take another drop again. And it's the same way. If you've had problems with money, would you want to take on the position of the treasurer?
Better not.
Because it's just too tempting. And it's something that will be there all the time. It doesn't mean that we cannot deal, that God cannot deal with sin. He can. And he can eliminate it. But don't put yourself back in a position that makes you vulnerable again. Did you have a question, huh? Okay, I thought I saw a hand over there. So maybe it's my hair that's waving.
Well, and there are places where it comes to us in Scripture not to test the Lord our God. So if we know that we have a problem with whatever it is, we don't go in and surround ourselves by it just to test the Lord. You know, and just to test our mettle, are we able to do this?
Even test us. What the Lord says is, flee your youthful lusts.
Right.
You know, it's there. You know it. Flee it.
Know yourself well enough to know you're going to fail the test, so don't set yourself up.
Right.
There's that very big possibility.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's why the food in our house is so boring. Just sit there and look. There is not a thing in this house I want to eat. I think that was the point.
Vacation. Go to grandma's, you don't have no food.
What was that? Well, sometimes I have no food, it's just boring food.
That's what Gage says. You're at grandma's, no food.
Okay, so verse 11. Now the acts of Asa from the first to the last, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa became diseased in his feet. His disease was severe, yet even in his disease he did not seek the Lord. So he has stubbornly stuck his way, hasn't he? How many years is that for?
He reigned 41, so the last 6 years.
Wow.
In the 39th year of his reign, he became diseased. So.
In verse 41 years or 38 years, depending on which calendar.
So, I've labeled for myself the three areas where I see Asa sin.
Go ahead.
One was in verse 7, because you relied on the king of Amram and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Aram has escaped out of your hand. Number 2, angry with the seer, put him in prison. And then oppressed some of the people. And number 3, he did not seek the Lord when he got his feet diseased.
Which means pretty much he hasn't sought the Lord through those years, too.
It's been quite a while. I don't know when this first one happened in the timeline, because I'm bad at the timeline thing.
One wonders what he did to oppress some of the people. We don't need to know that. We just need to know that
he did it.
That he did it. And that it was a new face that we hadn't seen before. Okay. Verse 13. So Asa slept with his fathers, having died in his 41st year of his reign. They buried him in his own tomb, which he had cut out for himself in the city of David, and they laid him in the resting place, which he had filled with spices of various kinds, blended by the perfumer's art. And they made a very great fire for him. Somebody want to look up 2 Chronicles 21:19? I mentioned this last week, but 2 Chronicles 21:19 as a response to this statement, they made a very great fire for him. And I told you that this was not cremation, because Jews don't cremate. Somebody find it? Just read it.
Now it came about in the course of time, at the end of 2 years. This is yucky, but his bowels came out because of his sickness, and he died in great pain, and his people made no fire for him like the fire of his fathers.
So they're telling us something by that fire, which has more to do with honor than it does to do with cremation or something else. So from that, we're presuming, when they make this statement, they made a very great fire for him, they're honoring him, Asa, the people are.
In 1 Kings 15:14, it has the different picture. If I read it right, it says, he was wholly devoted to God all of his days.
15:14? It says it actually 2 or 3 times. Oh, we're in 16.
Isn't it 15:14?
No, you're right.
Yeah,
I thought
it was. It is 15:14.
It says it several times.
Yeah.
So that's the confused. To me, that's the confusing part.
Yes.
Yeah. Because he died before that, right?
It has more to do with how he was living his life. As we were going through and meeting him, this is in chapter 15, and we are now in 16.
And we're in Chronicles, which is later.
Oh, okay.
And 1 Kings is more just a...
They do, it's like a summary.
Yeah.
Kings does like a summary, Chronicles does more involved. Mm-hmm. And yes, it says it 2 or 3 times, that he is wholly devoted to the Lord all the days of his life. And then we come to this in 16. And again, what I've always read, and I don't know if this is true or not, but what I've always read is Kings is from man's perspective and Chronicles is from God's. So I do think that there are things that God would see in relationship to his people that people don't see. And again, I don't know what it means. Honestly, this is where I leave things in the hands of the Lord. Whether Asa returned his heart to the Lord or never was really far away but was a stubborn, willful man, I believe in that in God's hands. How about you?
Yeah. Good idea. It looked like...
Well, what do you color his heart?
Half red, half black.
Well,
he says
black.
He's good.
I do a quarter black.
Or maybe outline it in black.
In the last verse of that chapter, 2 Chronicles 16, it says that he had filled the spices of various kinds of things like cooking his art. So it's kind of like he had set this up before he died because of how they're going to take care of him. They kind of, I mean, not that they didn't honor him, but he kind of figured out a way to.
He did it himself.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
Probably not.
I know with the Egyptians. Most of the life of the Pharaoh, he was having built a pyramid for him with chambers and antechambers and all that kind of stuff, because it took so long to build those things that it had to start early. And that's what pretty much the Jewish people were doing, was building the Pharaoh's chambers. So I don't know whether, because that's what I was thinking too, is like an awful lot of I in there. You know? But I don't know, that wasn't what he was supposed to do.
No, it's probably normal kings mm-hmm. to do that.
Yeah. We don't see that with David, though, do we?
No. But we don't know everything. I mean, it doesn't say that. It could still happen.
Right. It could still happen.
You're not given the information.
Right. Well, in the New Testament, Nicodemus, I mean, Jesus was laid in the tomb that assumably
was prepared for Nicodemus.
Yeah.
So it not quite as fancy as mm-hmm. Aces, right. But it's kind of all the way along. And I mean, even us, I'm not going to ask you guys, but think about it, how many of you already have where you're going to be buried. Oftentimes they have their family. I know when my mother died, it was so weird because I didn't even know this was going on. When she died in St. Louis, and they have a family plot, crypt that goes back like 150 years. And my mom was the last one put in there because there was no more room. I mean, there was lots of people in that spot. I didn't know about it. I don't think she would have been buried there had she not been in St. Louis. But there she is, all the way over there, you know. And she grew up there, and that's where her mother and father, no, not her father, he was not buried there. He was an adulterer. So mother and that family and went back, and then multiple cousins and all sorts of things.
Well, our presidents, they lay out way in advance how they want the ceremony and all the every little detail years before they die.
They were even saying, I doubt that Billy Graham did that much, but he had set what he wanted said and the songs he wanted sung. So this is not an unusual thing.
My husband has his all figured out.
Huh?
My husband has his all figured out and gave it to Jimmy, because he's a pastor, to do his service when he dies. So he's got it all written out, what he wants.
My mom, she liked the warm weather. They had raised us kids in Florida, so she said, please don't bury me in this cold, damp climate. So we took her back to Florida.
Mom, you won't know anymore.
I know, she knew that too. But she was like, don't put me in this cold, damp
ground. She didn't want her feet wet.
Huh? Yeah, she was cold here in the last year. She was used to Florida.
Well, that would be an adjustment, that's for sure.
And today it's an economic problem. When my dad was young, he was offered a plot for $1. They were developing this new cemetery, and there are 12 graves in that plot for $1.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that
and
be
I
nice?
Would be the last one buried there because it's full except for one. Mm-hmm. Wow. So naturally, instead of going out and buying another plot, you just kind of do it.
There are thousands.
There are little ways. There is a place, I'm trying to remember exactly where it is. I think it's out that way, where we buried Cliff's
wife.
Brother. Not his wife.
Wasn't she buried there too?
Probably. I didn't go to that burying.
That's the Jordan Cemetery.
It's free.
Hmm.
But you don't have any headstones or anything because it's just a plot of land, and they know which bodies are where. And the guy comes out and mows the lawn, but all you pay for is your what you put into the ground.
Yeah. Out on the Jordan Road, it's called the Jordan Cemetery. It's an old cemetery.
Was his and his brothers and his folks, and there was babies there, and
yeah.
And my brother has taken down and got a hold of a bunch of it too, but I'm going to be cremated.
I am too.
Me
mainly
too.
Because I just don't like wasting land for such a thing. I'm picky. I just don't want. Anyway.
I'm going to be buried in my backyard.
I don't know that you can do that. I thought about that before.
Yeah, you can.
Can you? You can get buried in your backyard.
Your cremation can.
Oh, really? Oh, that's different.
Yeah. I have my mother in my front yard.
You can be buried there.
Your mother's in your front yard.
Really?
How fun.
I didn't think you could do that.
Is she overseeing you?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into that. That would scare me.
You can bury a whole body?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, no.
No, you have to be
cremated.
I heard you could. I heard you could get special permission to bury a body.
It's illegal to bury a horse.
Well, a horse is huge.
Yeah. Or an animal anymore. Any kind. Dog, whatever.
Our dog just got buried in the backyard.
Yeah, ours are all there.
Did anybody look up commentaries on that chapter?
Which chapter? 16.
Chapter 16?
I did.
He said that it was good.
Right. They kind of get worse.
Well, he had his
that.
Heart was devoted to the Lord, so yeah. All his days, according to 15.
But it sure doesn't sound like that in Chronicles 16,
doesn't.
Does it? So, again, I'm going to let the Lord. No, honestly, and I've said this before, if we compare ourselves to anybody that's ever lived, all of us are a mess. Compared to Christ, none of us, we wonder why God would even look at us.
Really?
But he does. And we're thankful. And he's not that he doesn't deal with things, because he does.
Well, and isn't there the statement in there, well done, good and faithful servant?
That's what we're trying for, right?
So somebody has to hit the mark. I don't know who.
Well done, well done, good and faithful servant does not mean well done, perfect son.
No.
That's only one who got that one. Okay. Let's look at what we did this week.
Okay.
And do you need water, hon?
No, I'm fine. I just took a walk.
Okay. Alright, so we're back to the second half of Kings 15. Did we start on 23?
So where did you get all these papers from?
In the back of your book.
Sure, Grace.
Yeah, that's alright.
Well, you need to know where they are. Okay, so I think we start with verse 23. Now the rest of the acts of Asa and all his might and all that he did and the cities which he built, are they not written in the book of Chronicles, the kings of Judah? But in the time of his old age, he was diseased in his feet, and that's what it finished with. So what is Asa known for in verse 23?
The cities that he built.
Cities that he built.
And his might.
I don't know whether that started with taking apart the city that his enemy built, but nevertheless, that's what he's known for. He was building cities. And we saw that he started doing fortification, didn't he? Fortifying his cities, even though there was at that time no war. Okay, so, and then, so he told him that he's gone, and then verse 24, and Asa slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. So where were the kings in this line buried?
In the city of
Jerusalem.
Which is the other name for the city of David. And Jehoshaphat, his son, reigned. Do we have Jehoshaphat down? No.
Not yet.
I better carry this with me so I spell it right.
So we would just have to look at that.
1 Kings 15:25. Now Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, became king of Israel. So that's where we put him up here, Nadab. In the second year of Asa, so that would have been, he would have been a contemporary for a while. He reigned over Israel 2 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his fathers, and in his sin, which he made Israel sin. What was the sin of his father? What did Jeroboam do?
Idolatry.
It's idolatry. What? How did we see that?
He built two calves.
He put
one in
Bethel and one in another place. Shechem?
And didn't let his people go to Jerusalem to worship.
Didn't he install his own priests and his own holidays?
His own system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything he did, he was
fearful people to return.
Right. He made priests from among all the people who were not of the sons of Levi.
So he was going to set up these systems like Israel to keep people.
So it tells us he did evil, Nadab, in the sight, and Baasha, the son of Ahijah, of the house of Issachar, conspired against him. Against who?
Nadab.
And who's Baasha?
Baasha is the son of Ahijah.
So it's sort of like Jeroboam came out of nowhere, became king. So Baasha did the same.
We need to remember, too, there are a few Ahijahs, and they're not all this Ahijah.
No, in fact, I think there are like seven of them.
Yeah.
So that's where it's kind of know who, which had. This one distinguishes that he's from the house of Issachar.
Mm-hmm. He's a king of Ahijah, was called Ahijah, too.
The Asha.
Yes. So we're just going to take what it says here. With all Israel, they were laying siege to Gibeon, Gibbethon. Baasha killed him in the third year of
Asa,
king of Judah, and reigned in his place. So, in his place.
Nadab.
It's a long name, isn't it?
And if you wanted to, you could with like a green pen start writing in when it says like third year of, came in the 20th year of, you can do that in there. Verse 28, so Baasha killed him in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his place. Verse 29, it came about as soon as he was king, he struck down all the household of Jeroboam. Now, why would he do that?
So he had no rivals.
Right.
So
they were in line. They were the royal family. So he killed them all.
Yes, they were a new fake royal family.
But there was also a prophecy.
Right.
Right.
Well,
from Ahijah, who was not the Ahijah we just talked about.
This Ahijah that made the prophecy was a prophet.
Yes.
So we'll get there. Let's try and take it as we go. Well, it's just about there, aren't we? Do not leave to Jeroboam any persons alive until he has destroyed them according to the word of the Lord which he had spoke. He spoke by his servant Ahijah the Shilonite. So he was a
Shilonite. Now, is that the same Ahijah that's above?
I think that's what she's trying to say.
The Ahijah that's in verse 27 is of the house of Baasha was his son. Baasha, the son of Ahijah of the house of Issachar. Okay, and this is
a
different.
He's not a prophet.
No, and this is a different Ahijah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the first Ahijah she has on the board. That's a different
really
one also.
Did you catch the verse?
Prophesied to Jeroboam.
Right. That's the prophet. The
same prophet.
Yes, because there was a prophecy.
Did he call him the Shilonite?
To Jeroboam.
That's how God usually differentiates for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Look for that grace and let us know, okay?
Yeah.
Because of the sins of Jeroboam, which he sinned, and which he made Israel sin, there's a lot of sin in that verse. Because of his provocation with which he provoked the Lord of Israel to anger. And again, what was his sin? How did he provoke the Lord?
Idolatry.
Get the Elijah that... this is interesting. Ahijah, the son of Jeroboam, became sick. Ahijah, the prophet, is there.
Right.
So he just is. Ahijah, the prophet, was at Shiloh. Doesn't distinguish. He was.
He's a Shilohite.
Yep, that's the same place.
Right.
Now the rest. Verse 31. The rest of the acts of Nadab and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? There was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days. So there was war. Now, what do we know about Asa?
Well, he had a time of rest for quite a few years.
For 10 years, his first 10 years of his kinghood. And when did Baasha become king?
In his third year?
In the third year, Asa, king of Judah, Baasha, the son of Ahijah, became king over Israel at Tirzah. Now, what is Tirzah?
Is that a town? Mm-hmm.
It's a city, but it's not a capital.
But it seems to be where they're making their kingdoms, mm-hmm. going there now. Now, we already have from Jeroboam two cities that are cities of worship.
Yeah.
They are not these cities. And we're going to see another city brought in when we see Samaria brought in, which are also not. So we're seeing a whole bunch of them pop up, aren't we?
Right. So, and on our map, Tirzah is just a little bit northeast of Samaria.
Of what?
Of Samaria.
Yes.
Yeah.
They hadn't bought the hill of Samaria yet.
At Tirzah and Tirzah and reigned 24 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. Who is this?
Baasha.
And walked the way of Jeroboam. And in his sin, which he made Israel sin. So how did he make Israel sin?
By continued to worship idols.
So his sin was worshiping idols, and he brought those idols before the people, and they wanted to worship something, so they worshiped, so they wouldn't die with what their king was worshiping. He asked the question, has the quest for power ever changed since the days... He said of the north and the south, but from the beginning, have the days of seeking power ever changed? We still, and in fact, I said last week, and I was thinking about this even more this week, that there is no war that ever came about that wasn't based on lusts. Even the wars that God initiated, it was because of the lusts of the people he was dealing with. Lust, violence, I mean, it's all the same thing, wanting more, wanting something that doesn't belong to them. And God had wars because people were taking things that didn't belong to them. Chapter 16, verse 1. Now the word of the Lord came to David, the son of Hanani, against Baasha, saying, inasmuch as I exalted you from the dust and made you leader over my people, I further again further, who is Jehu?
Isn't he also a prophet?
He's going to be king, but I don't know. He's a son of somebody.
That's another Jehu.
He's a prophet.
That's this guy. It's this seer. He's the son of.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, who is it? He is seer, too.
To
Judah. Who is... Jehu, a seer to, or a prophet to?
Israel, the northern kingdom.
So, why do you think he's over here when his father was over there?
God sent him.
Well, look at the situations. What happened with his father?
Oh, he got not very. He was locked up, wasn't he?
He was put in prison. Yeah. So
that king wasn't listening. Let's try this game. I think the Lord said
if I stay there very long, I'll probably get in prison too. So headed over there, which is worse even.
But then he was only there temporarily.
Right.
God sent him there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was visiting.
Well, because later he became the king of Israel.
So.
Well, and just because God had a message for the prophets to give to the kings doesn't mean that the prophets resided in that area. I mean, Elijah was sent all over.
Don't see a whole lot of prophets over here, right. Although we see more physically at that point. This is the same one, but we don't know what he was doing at the time. And he was a prophet to Baasha, and he was a prophet to Baasha. Okay.
But you don't see prophets become kings either.
Well, we have to wait on that and make sure it's the same guy.
Oh,
okay.
Because
sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't.
Okay.
We want to see who his father is. And at this point, we haven't been told that yet. I mean, we've been told this, but okay. Inasmuch as I exalted you from the dust and made you leader over my people, Israel, and you have walked the way of Jeroboam and made my people, Israel, sin, provoking me to anger with their sins, behold, I will consume Baasha and his house, and I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Well, what is that house like?
You wiped it out.
Even though it was by a bad guy, it got wiped out still. So Jeroboam and Nabab's wiped out by Baasha.
Right.
And Baasha gets wiped out by...
We'll find out. And we'll make you a house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Anyone of Baasha who dies in the city, the dogs will eat. And anyone of his who dies in the field, the birds of heaven will eat. Now the rest of the acts of Baasha and what he did and his might, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? And Baasha slept with his father and was buried in Tirzah. And Elah, his son, became king. So, we have a new king. And because he's in Israel, we assume he's not going to last long. Everybody wants to be king there, evidently. I don't know why you'd want to be king when everybody before you has been slaughtered. But power is kind of a mighty aphrodisiac, yes? Verse 7. Moreover, the word of the Lord through the prophet Jehu, the son of Hanani, also came against Baasha and his household, both, one, because of all the evil which he did in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger with the work of his hands in being like the house of Jeroboam, and two, because he struck it. In the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah, Elah, the son of Baasha, became king over Israel at Tirzah and reigned 2 years. His servant, Zimri, notice how faithful these servants are. Zimri, commander of half of his chariots, conspired against him. Now he was at Tirzah, drinking himself drunk in the house of Arza, who was over the household at Tirzah. We never hear of him again, ever. That's it, right there. Arza. But what did we learn about the king?
He was drinking himself drunk.
Zimri only ruled 7 years.
And what did God say in the Bible about kings? And alcohol.
Actually,
he had them staying pretty free of it because they needed to do what? Why did they need to be one to, besides the fact, make less of the chance of getting wiped out by your commander and half of his chariot? It also keeps you thinking more clearly. Mm-hmm. And the leader needs to think clearly. So, Zimri went in and struck him and put him to death in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, and became king in his place. So now we have a new king.
Well, and again, in the Hebrew writing, we need to remember, like, whenever it's in verse 9, when it says, now he, doesn't refer to Zimri, even though that was the last person. It refers back up to...
So how do you know it doesn't refer to Zimri? Just by what it says.
Yeah,
by what it says. Because he didn't get struck.
Yeah.
Yes. In English, we have our pronouns fitting with our last noun generally, most generally. In other languages, you really have to take the context and figure out what it's saying. Mm-hmm. Verse 11, it came about when he became king, as soon as he sat on his throne, that he killed all the household of Baasha. He did not leave a single male, neither of his relatives nor of his friends. Not even his friends. You couldn't have been a friend of Baasha and survived that one. Why would that be, do you think?
They don't want anybody rising up from the family, or in this case the friends, against them. So, with a vendetta or revenge.
Absolutely. Best way to ensure that you'll be around for a while. Then Zimri destroyed all the household of Baasha, according to which he spoke against Baasha through Jehu the prophet. Who spoke that through Jehu the prophet?
God.
God did. For all the sins of Baasha and the sins of Elah, his son, which they sinned, and which they made Israel sin, provoking the Lord of Israel to anger with their idols. So let's see if this guy's any better. Now the rest of the acts of Elah and all he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? In the 27th year of Asa, so we're really following the line of Asa to figure out the time sense of these people. The 27th year of Asa of Judah, Zimri reigned 7 days at Tirzah. 7 days.
Jeez.
Now the people were camped against Gibbethon, and belonged to the Philistines. The people who were camped heard it said, Zimri has conspired and has also struck down the king. Therefore, all Israel made Omri, the commander of the army, king. So now we have Omri. So do we have two kings?
Only for a minute.
I have a question, because on our timeline it asks who the father of Zimri is, and I never found it. If anybody found it, please.
I don't think it does.
Sometimes they're asking you the father just because it helps us know things. It doesn't mean they had one. I mean, it doesn't mean we know who their father was.
Right. And
maybe that's what the question is really supposed to lead you to. There is no heritage, in other words. When we look at who the fathers were, it's for the purpose of helping us see where they fit in the history of Israel, and there's no fit there. What verse was I on? Okay, then Omri and all Israel with him went up from Gibbethon and besieged Tirzah. When Zimri saw that the city was taken, he went into the citadel of the king's house and burned the king's house over him with fire and died. So what caused his death?
He started the fire, committed suicide, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He knew it was over.
A little like Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty gross way to die. I think I'd kill myself first before I killed myself.
What?
You started the house on fire.
Are you trying to confuse me more here?
Yes. Because of his sins, which he sinned, doing evil in the sight of the Lord, and how long did he do this? How long did he do this?
7 days.
In the sight of the Lord?
Seven days.
Well, all his life.
Walking in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin, which he did, make Israel sin in 7 days. That's bad man.
Got rid of him in a hurry.
Now, the rest of the acts of Zimri and his conspiracy, which he carried out, are they not written in the Book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel? Then the people of Israel were divided into two parts. Half of the people followed Tibni. Don't know where he suddenly came from, but here he is. So, one half.
Another king. One
half. The son of Ginath, to make him king. The other half followed Omri. But, it's like a soap opera. But the people who followed Omri prevailed over the people who followed Tibni, the son of Ginath. And Tibni died, and Omri became king. So, these people prevailed. He died. Anything to add or any questions? I feel like we're going really fast through these, don't you? But that's kind of the way it's written.
Yeah.
So, in the 31st year of Asa, Omri became king over Israel. I think Asa would probably have a hard time following who is king at the time. And he reigned 12 years. He reigned 6 years at Tirzah. He bought the hill in Samaria from Shemer for 2 talents of silver, and he built on the hill and named the city which he built Samaria. So do you need to see who the Samaritans are? Are they Tyr Israelites?
No, it's mixed.
After the name of Shemer, the owner of the hill, Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord and acted more wickedly than all who were before him. Okay, so now he's got the title of what?
The most wicked.
Most wicked. Most.
Well, they just kept saying that for each king that came by. Then he was the most wicked. Then he was the most wicked.
And it just got worse.
It's the downward spiral,
yeah.
And they keep going, don't they?
Yeah.
And that's what it's teaching us, because what are they getting away from?
God.
They're getting away from God. They're getting away from teachers. They're getting away from listening to the prophets. They're doing what's right in their own eyes. They're making up their own religion. And now we come to the worst king of all.
So far.
Ahab, so far, yeah.
The son of Omri became king over Israel in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, and Ahab the son of Omri reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. Ahab the son of Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who went before him. So we're putting down Ahab. Son of who?
Omri.
Let's just kind of do son of there. And he did evil. Well, he had a good teacher, evidently.
Learned a lot from his wife, too.
Oh, but he married her, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, so came about that as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, he married Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, thank you. And he went to serve Baal and worshipped him. So who is he worshipping?
There must have been more than one, because it couldn't mess on there.
Yeah.
What I looked up as I studied on that is the Baals had multiple names, like Jeff Baal, Beth Baal, you know, like that kind of thing. But it was the same one. Yeah. And it would, because there was only one. But in different, it would be like in different countries, they had different names for them. But they all had the B-A-A-L in all of them, even though they had a Sir name a little bit different. So he erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, and he built in Samaria. Ahab also made the Asherah. Thus Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel than all the kings of Israel who before him. How did he do that? How did he provoke the Lord more?
I think by building that Asherah.
He had two of them, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody look up the Asherah?
It's some places called the Queen of Heaven. It's a Canaanite worship, the same as Baal.
And the Mother of the Sun?
Yep.
S-O-N?
Fertility Goddess.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want information and you can't find it, contact me and I'll send you some, okay? Just send me an email and I'll send you all information on this stuff.
Well, it was something that was so bad that...
God. Well... What, for those of you who did find anything on the Asherah, what do you know about her?
Well, again, she was, they were all at one point considered, Baal was considered the god of fertility also, and she was the queen of heaven, goddess of fertility. There was a lot of evil stuff went on in the worship.
They were sort of joined as a couple.
Yeah.
I mean, they were looked at in the god world as a couple.
Right.
The Asherah and the Baal.
Actually, that all comes from Nimrod.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And what do we know about Nimrod? He started all the cults of the Middle East.
Yeah.
And one of the cults is the worship of the mother child, which comes from her, Asherah. So, why would this provoke the Lord?
Because they're idols. I mean, they're not God. Nobody else should be worshipped but God.
And who brought this idol into Israel?
Jezebel
did. It's the worship of the female god. Mm-hmm. What is one of the last, what is one of the statements that God made in Genesis 3, 15-ish? 15, 14, 15, 16. It is 15, but I'm not sure if that's the verse that. What did he tell us that would be, it's not a curse. We always talk about it as a curse. But what did he say women were going to be left with? What were women going to do that was
going to... They were going to vie against their husbands and try to... There would be...
A usurping of position. And that's exactly what the Asherah stands for. She stands for the might of the woman who is going to take over, ruler, take over. In this case, she was the idol. As you said, with Nimrod, and for those of you who don't know what Nimrod is, that's the Tower of Babel. He was the one who built that area, that tower, and the cult of the mother child came out of the story of him, his life, Nimrod's life. I have a book on it if you ever want to read it. We may have it in the library.
And that mother and child is still in today all over the world.
It is.
Even in the Catholic Church, Mary.
It can get that one in the Catholic Church.
It
doesn't
that way.
Have to.
No, but Mary Alatry is there.
As I said, that is one of the major things I would struggle with the Catholic Church. Thus, Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel than any of the kings of Israel who were before him. In his day, Nephihiel, the Bethelite, built Jericho. Now, this to me is coming like out of the clear blue.
To me, too.
He laid its foundation with the loss of Abram. Abram, his firstborn, set up its gates with the loss of his youngest son, Segub, and according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Joshua, the son of Nun. Did you look up Joshua 6:26?
Yes.
What did it say?
Then Joshua made them take an oath at that time, saying, "Cursed before the Lord is the man who rises up and builds this city Jericho. With the loss of his firstborn, he shall lay its foundation, and with the loss of his youngest son, he shall set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua. Or whatever.
So why was there a curse on that?
Well, they, you know, took it. That was the one they marched around and
the walls.
So it was never supposed to be built
again.
Right.
And it persists to this day. There's people in it. Jericho is a city.
It's a cursed city.
Yeah.
The only reason it would be valuable for us to go to today is to witness the people. Okay. There's a lot of history you could get to study when you study Baal and the Asherah, just because it changes and moves around throughout history. And it goes to different countries and functions different ways. It's an interesting study. And like I said, the book that I read years ago, and I think there's a better one out, though, was called The Two Babylons, which talked about Nimrod and all of that. All of the worship and stuff that came out of that. Okay, Kings 17.
Before we move from here,
sure.
I think the this whole thing being like interjected in here. That was the time it happened, but it's for us. It's like, you know what God says is going to happen. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It might be hundreds of years later, but it's going to happen. His word is true and always will be.
And that's what we see going through all of this. When the seer says what he sees, even if.
Right.
Asa hides him and sticks him down in the prison, it still comes through, which means it isn't he who made the... He just was the word, the mouth.
Right, and it behooves us to take note of what God says and remember it, because, you know, this guy obviously maybe never heard that this might happen when he did it, you know. Too bad there wasn't somebody there that said, maybe it's not a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he said, oh, that was a long time ago.
Maybe.
None of those people are still around.
Sure.
Right? So what do we take away from that?
What God says.
Count of God. His word.
Right. We have the word of God before us.
Right.
And we do well to take heed, pay attention.
But if we're not careful, we make idols of for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
They might not be images, graven images.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that we put before God
right.
is an idol.
Right.
What could some of those be in our lives?
Well, television.
Yeah.
Could
Which
even
could
be
a
family.
Good or bad
Shopping.
Thing.
Could be family.
Could be family.
Family. Or a person, one person.
Mm-hmm. I think because family is so important, and because we're all of us who are mothers, who have been mothers, want to be the best mothers we could be, we forget there's a place for that. And it isn't the head of our life. It is, doesn't the Lord say in many different pictures, you love them more than me? Or, you know, what is the first thing he said to the disciples when he came back after he had resurrected? He asked them if they loved them more than him. And he's talking about the fish. You know? So there's all sorts of things we don't think about. We think we have a responsibility to provide, a responsibility to take care of, you know. And so that seems right for us, but and even sacrificial. He may be being sacrificial in that. It still may be idolatry, because it's for, we don't like to say this, but it's for us, not for the Lord. I mean, if we are good parents, are we good parents because God gave us this stewardship, or are we good parents because they belong to us?
Yeah, I really worried about that when I was a younger Christian, because I loved my mother so much. I would talk to him about that, and I trusted her, and I knew she loved the Lord. But it was like, you know, if anything happened to my mom, well, I just couldn't stand it. What would I do? Prepare me, Lord, for that. You know? But I came to a place where I thought, okay, if my mother who I adored and listened to and felt like I got messages through things she would, that God would sometimes speak to her and then speak to me. If she asked me, if my parents asked me to do something that I thought the Lord wouldn't want me to do, who would I follow?
Right.
And that cleared it up for me.
Yeah.
Because even though I loved my mother, I wasn't going to go against what I thought God was telling me. So that I have to go back to that sometimes.
I remember when Jay was in, I taught Christian school for a few years, and I had all three of my kids in my class, if you can believe that. But I think it was seventh grade. I remember Jay was kind of developing a kind of snotty attitude, not with words, but sat and slouching in his seat and stuff, and he was just had a cocky attitude about him. And I just stopped one day after it was just he and I, looked at him, I said, Do you know that I love you? And he said, yeah, Mom, I know. No, I mean, do you really know that I love you? Do you know that I sacrificed my life to serve you and your needs? Yeah, Mom, I really do know you do. Well, you keep heading the way you do, and you're going by yourself, because I'm not following you, I'm following the Lord. Mm-hmm. And he snapped right out of it at the time, because I meant that, and he knew I meant that.
Yeah.
He knew how much he meant to me. But you mean a lot to me, bud, but, you know, you head this way, I will grieve, and I will cry, and I will tear my hair, and whatever else, but I'm not following
you. I had to do the same kind of thing with Eric at a time, because he would just push me to try to get what he wanted. And when I finally said to him, you can ask me all you want to, I make this decision based on what I think God wants of me. And if you can just push all you want, that's never going to change. And he stopped because he knew I meant that.
Well, you had an end to the whole thing.
Yeah.
This is the foundation of what I
believe.
You
might as well quit, because I'm not following you and going against God. Oh, it helped.
Okay, so do we have any more questions with that chapter or statements? Okay, chapter 17. Now, she had us divide the chapter into major events. How did you divide them into major events? What were your major events that first, who is it about? Who is the chapter about? It's about Elijah. Okay. So, go ahead.
The first thing is that he was given the prophecy that there'd be no rain or dew until God commanded that it come
back.
That's
way down a bit.
That's verse 1. He says to Ahab.
Oh, he does. For whom I stand, surely there shall be neither dew nor rain these years, except by my word. Okay.
And then the Lord told him to head to hide himself, and the ravens and the would feed him, and the
which is kind of a weird out of the way kind of situation too. We'll see it fits later specifically, but here it's just like, well, why did you have to do that?
It was quite wonderful. I thought that God used the ravens.
Yeah, God provided the food and the water for him when the rest of the world, the area was drying up.
I think that's very important to pay attention to. That God did provide for him when others had no water and had no bread.
To us, it would seem unjust.
You know? Well, it's if we want to look from man's position, I suppose.
That's what I would.
So you'd have to go, if you look at this, you'd have to say, well, there must be a purpose in all this, right?
Right.
Well, God was protecting him from Ahab, so he gives Ahab this word. Ahab probably went home and talked to Jezebel and didn't know how to get him, probably.
Yeah.
And God wasn't ready for Elijah to die, so
he also wasn't ready for him to do what he wanted him to do.
Right. It's like, okay, you got to go over here and do this for a while. And at one point, the brook dried up, so it was like the water was drying up everywhere. It just took a while to get to where he was at.
There was no rain in the land.
Yeah. It's like a repeat of Judges, though.
Yeah.
It's because of God is punishing them because they have sinned against him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that cycle again.
Well, they're following the king.
And God punishes and then they repent.
God, the people were following the king. They were not following God. And then verse 8 says, then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, arise and go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and stay there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to provide for you. Kind of wonder how that all happened. How did he tell that widow, you know? So he arose and went to Zarephath, and when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her, and he said, please get me a little water in the jar that I may drink. Now, what does he already know about water in that area?
Drying up.
Drying up. So when he's asking for this, what is he doing? Does she just have spare water?
He's going to eat, and she's going to die.
She doesn't have spare water. You know that. But
she was willing to go and get it for
she
him.
She did
yeah.
have to go and get it.
Yeah.
So she was going to get it, and he called her and said, please bring me a piece of bread. So,
it's like,
so
oh, boy.
Not only am I going to do it, I'm going to push you a little bit further. Bring me a piece of bread in your hand. Please bring me a piece of bread in your hand. But she said, as the Lord your God lives, I have no bread, only a handful of flour in the bowl and a little oil in the jar, and behold, I'm gathering a few sticks that I may go and prepare for me and my son that we may eat and die. Yeah. So why is she going to die?
Starving
to death. They have no water.
Could the first part where he asks for a little water in the jar be a test as to whether this is the right person?
It could be. It could be. That's a good question.
Yeah. And my question is, she's a Baal worshiper, isn't she?
At this point, I don't know that we know that.
Well,
she's from
Sinai.
Oh, she's, yes.
She's a Sinai.
You're right. And plus, she is in Israel, and they're all following.
Zarephath is by Tyre, and that is Sidonian, isn't
it? Yeah, Tyre and Sidon. So she could be, but she might not be either. But she does say, you know what gives it away to me?
Later on, she does say, now I know that you are from God.
But I think what gives it away to me is verse 12. The Lord your God lives. Your God. She didn't say our God or the Lord God. And Elijah said to her, do not fear. Go. Do as you have said, but make me a little bread cake from it first, and bring it to me, and afterward you may make one for yourself and for your son.
And it's like, if I was her, I'd be saying, you didn't get it. I don't have enough.
And I don't know you, and I don't need nothing.
You didn't hear me the first time.
Yeah, I don't particularly get a holiness from her.
Well, it was kind of cool, though, that the Lord waited until she was in the most distress. I mean, she was literally gathering the sticks to make that last when he shows up. It's not like, you know, there's a lot of time in there.
She still has a couple weeks to go,
It
could be like
sharing out of abundance.
Buying a lottery ticket. What have I got to lose? I'm going to die anyway, so.
Kind of, yeah.
Might as well give this a try.
But she's thinking her boy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, what she has left, she wants to make sure he's taken care of. Verse 14, for thus says the Lord God of Israel, the bowl of flour shall not be exhausted, nor shall the jar of oil be empty, until the day that the Lord sends rain on the face of the earth. So she went and did according to the word of Elijah, and he and her household ate for many days. The bowl of flour was not exhausted, nor did the jar of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke through Elijah. So, she got test number one. And she passed it, and she watched that which should have gone in one small meal went on for days, for her household even. Now it came about, verse 17, after these things, that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became sick. Now, this is the devastating part. And his sickness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. What does that mean?
He died.
Because no theos neustos. You don't have theos neustos, you die. Breath is a very important part of our existence. So she said to Elijah, what do I have to do with you, O man of God? You have come to bring me my iniquity to remembrance and to put my son to death. So her sin is coming up before her very eyes, isn't it? And he said to her, "Give me your son." Then he took him from her bosom and carried him up to the room, upper room where he was living, and laid him on his own bed. Now, I think it's interesting that he kind of took her out, took him away from her, so she's not watching any of this. He called to the Lord and said, "O Lord, my God, have you also brought calamity to the widow with whom I am staying by causing her son to die?" Because he doesn't know whether he did or not, does he? He's asking him. He's praying and he's asking him.
And perhaps that's why he needed to get away. Just to go inquire by himself with the Lord.
It's between him and God,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. He doesn't need her to watch his struggle with God or his questioning before God.
And in that sense, I mean, as parents, we do the same thing with our kids. If there's something that we're not sure about and our kids don't need to see us oscillating,
right.
We don't do it in front of them. We may talk to them about it later. Then he stretched himself upon the child 3 times. This is done, must be something that's Israeli, because they do it later on. Paul does it. And called to the Lord and said, "O Lord my God, I pray you let this child's life return to him." So one, he went to the Lord in prayer asking. Two, he put himself upon that child and committed himself to that child. Called to the Lord, "O Lord my God, I pray you let this child's life return to him." And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child returned to him, and he revived him. And then 23, number 4, Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room to the house and gave him, number 5, back to his mother. And Elijah said, "See, your son is alive." And the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth." And I think that's interesting. And that is the way that's stated, too, lets us no, she probably wasn't a believer before. Because the way she's saying it, "Now I know that you're a man of God," okay, anybody who is a believer could say that, right? "And the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth." If he's a man of God, it would be. So why is she saying this now and not when with the flour and the oil?
She didn't know.
She didn't know. This is kind of the next level of understanding, isn't it? Before, I think one of you said, "Well, it's only one meal, you know." I mean, if they die after the one meal, they're going to die 10 minutes later or 10 minutes earlier. And here, this is a little bit bigger. The boy has died. I like Kay's one statement. "When did Elijah get the chutzpah to make pronouncement to such an evil king like Ahab?" So what did you learn from the verses in Deuteronomy and Leviticus?
Anything? God used famines to speak to his people that they repent, turn around, and follow him.
Yeah. And if they turn away and serve idols, there will be no rain and no blessing on the land, no crops. But if they obey and turn back and follow him, then the rain will come.
So he will shut up the heavens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When his anger is kindled.
Then he will heal the land.
Mm-hmm. And God does that today.
Mm-hmm.
Earthquakes. And things to cause people to stop and think.
Get their attention.
Yeah.
I don't think they all get it.
No,
but you know, some do. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that he did that whole thing for. I remember when there was a huge major earthquake down in California, and it was in the pornography section of the state. And I'm thinking, wow, are you guys paying attention? I mean, he's like getting me. Now, you know it went on, but you know that there are people in there that listened and heard and maybe got out of it. But that, to me, it was so obvious of the place that he picked. And he does that. Okay. Do I want to say anything about that? How about Hebrews 11, 1 through 6? So the question is, how do these verses tell you about Elijah's word to Abraham, to Ahab, and how was he acting?
Without faith, it's impossible to please God.
So again, we go back to that, isn't it? The foundation of a relationship with God is faith. And then it becomes obedience. In James, we saw that Elijah was a man with a nature like ours. I think that's important that we get that. And then he prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. Now, why did he do that? Did he do that arbitrarily? Why did he pray that it would not rain?
Well, God was getting ready to judge, and Elijah knew that, and that was the judgment that was pronounced before you, and he was solemnly afraid. That was
And he said that, didn't
yeah,
he? So Elijah was simply praying what God had laid before him.
Mm-hmm.
And he prayed again, and the sky poured rain, and the earth produced its fruit. Have any of you ever been in a situation where you prayed something weird like that? Where you prayed it rained or didn't rain, or I don't know. There's all sorts of. You've got a smirk on your face.
At the wedding of Tanner and Lauren.
Oh, that was a day that was supposed to rain.
And it did all over. It thundered, it lightning right up here, up Scotty Road, and we were out on Jordan Road in this open-air wedding outside by the Jordan River. And you could hear it, and you could see it. You could hear the thunder all around. And I got home, and it had been flooded all over. And I saw the clouds coming, and I heard them as they got closer, and I was just praying and saying, "This isn't too hard for you, God. You can do this. You can do this. You have made it." I mean, we knew the forecast. We knew what it was. But Lauren was just set. She really, really wanted to be married outside. And I just prayed to the Lord. Not that it was just because of me, but I just told him, "This is not too..." Yeah, exactly. "This is not too hard for you, God. You can do this." And we didn't feel one drop until we were literally cleaning up after everything was done.
After everything was done, it started to sprinkle.
Sprinkle, and then,
You
told a story of you being in a Circle Drive camping.
Yeah, that's another story. I had been asked to take kind of the role of the female leader, because there was a bunch of guys going up hiking and there was one girl wanted to hike. And I said I would do that because I had hiking, backpacking gear always ready in a backpack. So off we went. And this was supposed to be a Christian group of people. And the leadership was supposed to be a Christian group of leadership. And they were just doing their own thing. It got me very upset, but it had been set up ahead of time, which I didn't know about, that the tents that were brought, which were like tube tents, for those of you who don't know, they're really light and you can put them in a backpack and carry them with you. And there were only enough tents for matching up people. And I was supposed to be matched up with this guy. And I said, "I will not do that, period." And I said, "If it rains on me, it will rain on me. But I believe that God will take care of this and he will show you what he wants to say to you." And that night it poured all around us. And there was a perfect circle around where I lay down to rest. That was absolutely dry. That was like, that shook me more than I'm sure anybody else, because I believed it. I'm not sure what they believed. But the Lord, I just felt like the Lord wanted me to take that stand. And that young girl, I pray for her every time I think about her. anyway.
But God does allow us to make fleeces, and in some ways, like with, I can't think of his name.
Gideon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're in our process.
When we're not sure,
he knows our friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really felt I was sure. I felt the Lord was telling me to say that. I sounded pretty bold, too, and I was just mm-hmm. beginning to be bold. I mean, you guys hear me sounding fairly bold at times. I really wasn't a particularly bold person growing up, so to take a stand was mm-hmm. kind of one of those first times.
Well, it was like Dan in the lion's den. It was like, well, if we perish, or if I perish, I perish. But mm-hmm. I'm going in, and three in the fiery furnace was the same way. It's like,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If you're willing, you won't.
And then it taught them how to let their faith grow.
Right.
Just as it does all of us. Or when we look at that story, we ask the Lord to let our faith grow. That big... But I think when the Lord wants you to do something, he gives you the faith for it. You don't think you're going to have the faith ahead of time. I would never have thought about, like, asking the rain not to rain on me. But it fit that situation. Mm-hmm. And okay, so, verse chapter 18. So how did we go back? How did we divide chapter 17? Anybody want... I'm trying to give you room to be able to share what you studied, how you did it. We don't need to discuss it if you don't want to.
I put verse 1 by itself.
Okay.
And then verses 2 through 9 as a group. So that's where he was at the brook Cherith, and the ravens provided for him. And then 10 through 16 by itself. So the widow was providing for Elijah, and that was like her first test of faith. And she actually responded to that faith, and it probably gave her reason to have more hope later, even after her son died, you know, to at least ask him. And then 17 to 24 was the last section.
Good. I did it slightly different than you. I just did 2 through 7.
Okay.
Up to the point where the brook dried up. But this is to get us to see how God is giving a consistency here and see how it flows out. Help us stop and think about that.
I did 2 through 7, and I just titled it, God Provides for Elijah. And then down below, 9 on, I said, God prepares the widow to take care of Elijah. Then test 1 and test 2.
Good. Very good.
And I put two, there was a prophecy for the widow, and the prophecy was fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Imagine why God picked that woman.
She's been crying out to him.
She must have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somehow, somewhere. Okay, chapter 18. It happened after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, show yourself to Ahab. I will send rain on the face of the earth. That almost sounds like the flood. I will send rain on the face of the earth. So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now, the famine was severe in Samaria. Why Samaria? Why is he talking about Samaria?
That's where Ahab was.
Yeah,
the northern kingdom.
That's where Ahab is. Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household. Now, Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. I love that statement. I cannot imagine this man sitting in the middle of nowhere, basically having a quiet faith. For when Jezebel destroyed the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and provided them with bread and water. Why is that a huge thing? What is going on in the city?
She's murdering all the priests.
Okay, and she's a pretty wretched woman.
Yeah.
But not only that, what did Obadiah do?
He provided for them.
He provided.
That I wonder how he got all that bread.
Without anybody figuring it out.
Yeah, because he was over the household, so at least he had
maybe
possibilities.
Yeah.
Or well, maybe God multiplies. We don't know, do we?
Right.
Well, and this is important, too, because... there's 100 prophets, so he knew that there were people who weren't following the Baals. And
yes.
They were still following the Lord.
And they evidently were speaking.
Right, and this gets pointed out later to Elijah, but for here, yeah, that's an important thing to know, that even though the leaders are doing horrible, awful things, there were still these men that the other men knew. They weren't just keeping quiet to themselves and saying, nobody needs to know, I still follow God. I mean, they were comrades together.
It's pretty, that little section right there is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And Ahab said to Obadiah, go through the land to all the springs of water and to the valleys, perhaps you will find grass and keep the horses and mules alive. They're getting desperate. And not have to kill some of the cattle. So they divided the land between them to survey it. Ahab went one way by himself and Obadiah went another. And I said, that's kind of an amazing thing for a king to do. Mm-hmm. It really is. That shows us a lot of desperation. Verse 7, now as Obadiah was on the way, behold, Elijah met him and he recognized him. And he fell on his face and he said, is this you, Elijah, my master? Now, why would he call Elijah his master?
Well, Elijah was head over the prophets, and it doesn't say that here. But
he was following God.
So yeah. His master really was Ahab,
and he's
spiritually,
right?
Spiritually,
because
Elijah was his master.
Yeah,
because Elijah was the one who had feared God since he was a child.
Well, and it does bring out, too, I mean, he knows a lot about Elijah from the next verses that he says.
He said to him, it is I, go and say to your master, behold, Elijah is here. And he said, what sin have I committed that you are giving your servant into the hand of Ahab to put me to death?
He's not going to like that message.
No. At the same time, you would think he's looking for him. So here Obadiah is the one who's found him.
But
as the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent to search for you. And when they said he is not here, he made the kingdom or nation swear that they could not find you. And now you are saying, go save your master. Behold, Elijah is here. It will come about when I leave you that the Spirit of the Lord will carry you where I do not know. So when I come to tell Ahab and he cannot find you, he will kill me.
Right.
Although your servant has feared the Lord from my youth. It has not been told to my master what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord, that I hid the 100 prophets of the Lord by 50s in a cave and provided them with bread and water. And now you are saying, go say to your master, behold, Elijah is here? He will then kill me. Elijah said, I don't think it's just that he would kill him. He would kill him probably in a masterful way. Elijah said, as the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today. He called him the Lord of hosts. What does that mean?
I don't know. It seems like Elijah, all through the Bible, is more than just a man.
Well, this is
he's calling
God.
God.
This is one of God's names.
Yeah, in 15.
In 15, he's calling him as the Lord of hosts.
He's the deliverer.
Yeah. What about the fact that supposedly
it's later on? Sabah.
Yeah.
Or Sabah, depending on how you want to say it. But it's Sabah. S-A-B-A. And it's Yahweh Sabah.
Uh-huh.
The Almighty. Mm-hmm. He's the Almighty, the Deliverer. That's the way he's specifically being spoken about God. Elijah said, as the Lord of hosts lives before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today. Somebody want to read 1 Samuel 7, 42 through 47? Let me know if you're going to do that. 1 Samuel 17, 42 to 47. And then Proverbs 18:10. Okay. Somebody doing Samuel?
I haven't.
Okay.
1 Samuel 17, 42 through 47.
Yes, ma'am.
When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. This one that you're looking for? Okay. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands."
So that was the Lord's Saba again, or Sabaoth. Mm-hmm. Yahweh, Sabaoth. And Proverbs 18:10
says, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and is saved."
And that's the Lord of hosts. He's a strong tower. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is this you, you troubler of Israel?" Now, why does he think he's a troubler of Israel?
Well, he stopped the rain, he thinks.
He even thinks he goes back further than just Ahab. It's before him, too. He said, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals," or Baals. "Now then, send and gather to me all Israel at Mount Carmel, together with 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the Asherah, who eat at Jezebel's table," as one big table. Verse 20. So Ahab sent a message among all the sons of Israel and brought the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Elijah came near to all the people and he said, "How long will you hesitate between two opinions?" This is a very interesting statement. If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people did not answer him a word. Why didn't they answer him a word?
They're waiting to see who's going to win.
They probably don't know if they know. I mean, who is the Lord God? And by the way, that is the picture of Baal. Is this Yahweh Baal or is this Baal Baal? Then Elijah said to the people, "I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men." Now, in other words, there's a lot more power there if you're going by the human ways, right? If you were just looking and thinking Baal had a lot of prophets and there are only 450 prophets and there's only Elijah, which would you pick? Because in the ways of the world, it's kind of a little tipped toward Baal. "Now let them give us two oxen and let them choose one ox for themselves and cut it up. And place it on the wood, but put no fire under it. And I will prepare the other ox and lay it on the wood, and I will not put any fire under it. Then you call on the name of your God. Then I will call on the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God." In other words, okay, let's find out who God is. And all the people said, "That's a good idea. That sounds pretty good. Maybe they'll answer our question." So Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose one ox for yourselves and prepare it first, for you are many, and call on the name of your God, but put no fire under it." When we think about these people who kind of didn't say anything at all the first time, but now they say that they think that's a good idea. Did they not have the chance to know about the God of heaven?
Well, their history, they would have been paying attention.
Well, and we see Obadiah. He loved the Lord from the time he was young. So well, there are witnesses.
There are all those prophets that were hid away from somewhere. They were doing something at some point.
Right.
Probably saying the truth.
So are these people committed people looking for truth, or are they just kind of going from one thing to the next?
Beautiful.
I just think that they're going with the wind.
It's kind of interesting that they're sacrificing oxen, which is very close to their idol calves.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, huh?
Could have been a ram.
Mm-hmm.
But they chose an ox.
Maybe God chose an ox.
Yeah.
Verse 26. Then they took the ox, which was given to them, and they prepared it, and they called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was no voice. No one answered. And they leaped about. I just cannot picture this. They leaped about the altar which they had made. So they took the ox, they prepared it, they called in the name of Baal, and they bounced around all over the altar. And it came about at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, call out with a loud voice, as if they hadn't been doing that. For he is a god. Either he is occupied or gone aside or maybe on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and needs to be awakened. And the word occupied really means he's probably in the bathroom. Verse 28, so they cried with a loud voice, and they cut themselves according to their custom with swords. That is really gross. And lances until the blood gushed out from them. When the midday was past, they raved until the time of the offering of the evening. And raving is a prophecy word. They prophesied to speak by inspiration. Somebody want to look up Zechariah 13:3? Because raving to me is like lunatics running around with their heads kind of
foaming at the mouth.
Yeah, kind of.
It brings to my mind.
Zechariah 13:3.
I hope so.
And if anyone still prophesies, then his father and mother who gave birth to him will say to him, you shall not live, for you have spoken falsely in the name of the Lord. And his father and mother who gave birth to him will pierce him through when he prophesies.
And that's the word that is used here for rave. Until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, but there was no voice, no one answered, and no one paid any attention. So with all their... Now, could Satan have answered?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He could have. Why didn't he?
Because he's evil.
God didn't allow him to.
God didn't allow him to. Right.
We know from Job that Satan, is, even though he thinks he has a lot of power, and he has more than we do, he still cannot do things unless God has okayed it. And God did not okay this.
God wanted to show himself strong on Elijah's behalf at this point.
Right. Exactly. Because he's pointing to Elijah's message, isn't he?
Right.
He's backing him up. Then Elijah said, said to all the people, come near to me. So all the people came near to him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. I think that's interesting. He kind of waited till the end to fix the altar.
Mm-hmm.
It's more dramatic, don't you think? I mean, here's this process. He's fixing the altar, and the people are watching, and they're waiting to see what is going to happen. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, Israel shall be your name. So with the stones, he is prophesying with words and with actions all over the place. So with the stones, he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he made a trench around the altar, large enough to hold 2 measures of seed. Then he arranged the wood and cut the oxen in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, fill 4 pitchers with water and pour it on the burnt offering and the wood. And he said, do it a second time. And they did it a second time, and he said, do it a third time, and they did it a third time.
Making sure the wood was really wet.
So, the water flowed around the altar, and he filled the trench with water. I think I'm in a hurry. We're 5 minutes over, but I'm just going to finish this so we start fresh next week. At the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, Elijah the prophet came near and said, O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today shall be known that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that these people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back again. Then, verse 38, the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the consumed the stones. Pretty amazing. And the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when the people saw this, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is. The Lord, he is God. Then Elijah said to them, seize the power, the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon. Have we seen that brook before?
Yes, back in Judges.
Yeah.
And Deuteronomy.
Gideon. Not Gideon.
Excuse me, Judges.
I also think that's the brook where Asa took his mother's...
ashes?
No, that was...
his mother, that her god, ashes.
That was Kidron, right around Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah. Close. Okay. Brook Kishon.
Kishon is...
It's up by Mount Carmel.
Okay.
And it's way from
Jerusalem. Yeah, my Bible calls it Wadi, I guess
that.
Where
the woman killed a man with
that. Okay. And it rains, it gets water.
Oh, wow. These what remember is what?
The jail. Jail killed Sisera. There. I remember the chariots got caught in the flood. Oh, that was...
No, you're right.
The judges. Deborah. The story of Deborah.
Right. Yeah.
Boy, don't ever play in a game with her.
Right.
When she's on your side.
Yeah.
Right. Not when she's out there remembering these things. She brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. And Elijah said to Ahab, go up and eat and drink, for there is the sound of the roar of the heavy shower, and you can finish that off at home. Because I really don't want to keep you any longer than... We'll touch base on that. Start at verse 42. Lord God, we come before you, and sometimes, Father, as we go through the word, it's just... easy to push through it and not hear, but I pray that we hear and we meditate and we see you as that strong power, and that we, Lord, understand what you were doing then and what you are doing now. Give us insight and wisdom. Give us courage to be obedient in the name of your Son. Amen.